This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
The Supreme Court is to decide, can government control social media? Can officials have critics arrested? Plus, Trump fails to make bail, and Putin is reelected again. The Monica Perez Show starts now. Thank you all for listening. Many people are here live on across platforms, Rumble, Rockfin, YouTube. If you want to hear this show in its entirety, commercial free, you can tune in live Tuesdays and Thursdays, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. And if you want to hear the entire show commercial free and in its entirety on iTunes, become a premium member to the Monica Perez Show podcast for only $4.99 a month. And I say that because it's around the price of one newspaper. So I read the news so you don't have to. It's a chore, but I do have to buy the newspaper. So buy me a newspaper on iTunes Premium, and I'm going to introduce Premium across the board shortly. You can find everything on MonicaPerezShow.com. And now for our first story. The Supreme Court is in session, as you know, and we've been having some pretty interesting cases lately. There are quite a few about the First Amendment, which I've noticed has been on the way out for a while now. But this one is specific to the COVID era. It's the Supreme Court is considering whether or not the White House specifically, I think, in this case, crossed a line in asking social media platforms to take down specific posts and what it called COVID misinformation. The case was brought by Missouri and Louisiana, the states, and lower courts have said that, yes, they crossed the line. And one of the courts actually, this is the Fifth Circuit, I think, actually barred the government from communicating with social media platforms at all. Now, the social media platforms are basically government constructs, which is why I say they should actually be bound by the First Amendment, not like you if you had a private institution, a private bar. You don't need to, they make you, like they make grocery stores let you have political speech on their property. I disagree with that. But this, I consider this to be a quasi-governmental entity, and they should have to follow those rules. But we've talked about that before. Anyway, but if they had a rule like this, like they could not even speak to them, maybe they would be somewhat free. They would maybe be that I would say, unprecedented case of something that has gone basically rogue and is not already on control under control of the government. You know, they say like, oh, Osama bin Laden was our agent, but then he went rogue. Like, I never believe that. But this could be a way to unleash it. Anyway, it seems like the Supreme Court is going to overturn that for sure. And actually, it's already been narrowed. The justices had a lot to say. Different ones had different things to say. One of the themes was who was their standing? Who was harmed by these rules? And one of the things was, I think a specific case was, I have to remember this one, RFK posted, was it Hank Aaron? Somebody who died, and he suggested that it might have been a vax injury, and Meta was asked to take it down, and they did take it down. And the question is, who was harmed and who has standing? Now, I get very annoyed because the government is, you know, taxpayers don't, or government, you know, whatever, people, the citizens who are bound by unconstitutional laws or whatever, don't just have general standing to sue the government for their dereliction of duty or for the abuse of power. You just don't usually have standing for anything, really. Normally, I think it's a very specific harm to you. Anyway, I would say, so you can't go out of your way and say, well, people who were encouraged to take the vax because that information wasn't there and they were injured, Like, that would be a tricky thing to prove because you'd have to say, well, that specific post, yada, yada. Anyway, standing is a hard thing to get for stuff like this. And it's true, the harms are elusive or hard to articulate. However, I would say it works in the other direction as well, that the way you recover from somebody giving information that hurts you or doing something reckless on their platform that would hurt you, it's a tort. Like, this would, like, the government saying you need to take this down, that's a priori restraint. That's telling you you cannot exercise First Amendment rights because somebody might get hurt. That's not the way it works. You do it if you want to take the chance that if somebody gets hurt, you are not going to be held liable. That's the way the system works. And that's the way it should work, in my opinion. So here they're like, well, you have to prove that you were harmed by blah, blah. Okay, so few people have standing, and I don't know if it's going to survive that scrutiny. The different justices that said a few interesting things, Kavanaugh seemed to be saying that this would be a no-brainer, like you would be able to have this restraint of speech if we were engaged in a hot war, and that this was, you know, the implication is that this was effectively a war, which of course, you know, it definitely served many of the purposes of war, such as if you look at the report from Iron Mountain, like, which actually studied substitutes for war during the 60s. And actually, I'm going to play something later. I have a new kind of feature that I will play later. It's a JFK speech where he says, I mean, I almost feel like Kavanaugh is ripping him off. I'm surprised. Maybe if I looked into it, he does actually quote JFK talking about, if the Cold War were a hot war, I wouldn't have to ask you to self-censor. I'd just be able to censor you. So that's the kind of thing. Everything's a war, you know, every enemy is Hitler or whatever. But this would be an important precedent. If we could actually save free speech and social media, that would be awesome because we were tricked, cajoled, and actually driven by policy into using social media as the public square. So again, another reason that it should be treated as such. Now, the way they're actually framing the main question, I don't even, in my mind, either way, it fails. But they're saying, was the government just trying to use its powers of persuasion behind the scenes? Or were they actually threatening the social media platforms with action? And the specifics were regulatory action or antitrust action that they may be more inclined to pursue. But for me, the government is a threat. The government is that's all it is a threat. There are no, what is the source of persuasion from the government? The source of persuasion is, I will not hurt you. I will not use my power to hurt you. And the government has an unfair advantage in the information war anyway. They have all the resources that they can pull together these studies. They have the bully pulpit. They have entire TV channels dedicated to them. Their stuff gets picked up. They basically own the press anyway. That's Operation Mockingbird, Cord Meyer, JFK era or post-JFK era control of the newspapers. And so they have the control of academia, behind the scenes and in public universities. So let them stand on their own reputation and call press conferences, but they don't want to do that because they know that they don't have credibility. So they want to curate the conversation so it looks organic. It looks like there's this overwhelming one-sidedness, but there isn't, except for their influence. And that's why they have to use their influence, because it isn't overwhelmingly one-sided. And I would say even better than figuring out the policy around this is to just have the federal government stick to its mandated constitutional powers, the 18 powers, listed powers in the Constitution, which do not include this. And I think it was actually flirted with. Health Freedom wasn't one of the founders inclined to put a Health Freedom amendment in the Bill of Rights. I mean, I don't know if that's a modern myth or what, but it was not meant to, medicine was not meant to be in the hands of the federal government. So the other important thing is that if they were pressuring these platforms to take this stuff down, that's tantamount to regulation in that if they say, well, if you don't do it, we're going to take action against you, like use other things, liability, antitrust. We're going to use our other powers against you. We're not going to dox you or ding you for free speech. We're going to ding you for other things. And that would make you, as Meta or whatever, say, okay, I will comply. I will comply. And in the hopes that others do not comply. Because if others do not comply, you have this advantage where they have to fight lawsuits. They have to defend themselves and you don't. So that's like the equivalent of a regulatory barrier to entry, where if you have these accounting regulations or environmental regulations or whatever that, or legal regulations that cost so much to enforce that the little guys just can't do it. And you have a big legal apparatus, a big accounting apparatus. You can just gobble up all the little guys at dirt cheap because they really can't survive. And then you have this oligopolistic or monopolistic powerhouse that's protected by what are called, literally in business school, regulatory barriers to entry. And this is, in my mind, similar, is as effective. They went so far, the government went so far, that they actually, one of the examples in the Wall Street Journal was that the government told social media that the Hunter Biden story about the laptop that the New York Post exposed was Russian disinformation and had them take it down on those grounds. So the government knew, according to this article, that that was not true. So they used that word. That is beyond persuasion. That is coercion. That's fraud. That's fraudulent grounds. But I don't even want to get into that because the government has absolutely no business in controlling the speech at all. Especially when it comes to political stuff, which all of this is. All of this is political. If there weren't two, if it was just facts on their face without any dispute, you wouldn't even have to worry about it because it would be obvious to people. So let me read a couple of the specifics. Records disclosed in this case of Meta showed a continuing relationship between government officials and their company liaisons, one that wasn't always so smooth. We are gravely concerned, this is a quote, we are gravely concerned that your service is one of the top drivers of vaccine hesitancy, period. White House aide Robert Flaherty said in a March 2021 email to an unnamed Facebook contact. We want to know that you're trying. We want to know how we can help. And we want to know that you're not playing a shell game with us when we ask you what's going on. So the argument is that that is just the government's art of persuasion, and not a threat. But let me ask you, if I wrote that email to Facebook, do you think they would care? Do you think I could persuade them to my point of view? No, it's a threat. Then Justice Samuel Alito, in probably the most laughable display of naivete or disingenuousness I've ever seen, he said the exchanges between officials and the platforms looked nothing like the arm's length relationship he understood the media to maintain with the government. Gee whiz, I didn't know it could work that way. The government is, quote, treating Facebook and these other platforms like they're subordinates, Alito said. Would you do that to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Associated Press, he asked Fletcher. And I would direct Justice Alito to Operation Mockingbird, you can find it on Wiki, run by Cord Meyer, the, fun fact, the husband or ex-husband of JFK's last mistress, Mary Meyer, Mary Pinchenmeyer, I think her name was. Anyway, talked about her recently. She was found dead the day the Warren Commission report came out. Who knows what she knew? But anyway, Operation Mockingbird was about the 60s, about the government controlling the press and making deals such as, we will embed you with the Vietnam military action if you censor what you say. We'll give you inside information, but you can only print what we tell you to print. So I'm surprised, and this was the Washington Post was the biggest violator of, or the biggest subject of that. And that was the, I think that's the newspaper of record, if I'm not mistaken. So yes, Justice Alito, yes, they would. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, another fun fact. Paul Ryan, the fake libertarian who ran for vice president against Ron Paul, the actual libertarian, or the greatest limited hangout who ever existed. I love him either way. But anyway, Paul Ryan's sister's sister, if I've got this right, is married to Ketanji Brown Jackson's husband's twin. So her husband's twin is married to Paul Ryan's sister-in-law. Whatevs. So she said, suppose someone started posting about a new teen challenge that involved teens jumping out of windows at increasing elevations, she said. Officials can't call the platform and say, we really think you should be taking this down. First of all, shouldn't suggest things like that. It's a bad idea. And you don't need them to call because companies have liability. You could sue them. Or better yet, if the government has this mandate, they could issue a warning, urge people, don't have your kids use Facebook. Don't have your kids use TikTok. I guess it's impossible. We don't control our kids anymore. So maybe there needs to be, I wouldn't say there needs to be restrictions on what they can say or do. There are, liability deters companies. Liability deters companies. So if you know what you're doing and you have the means to prevent it, you are held to that standard. And that is what a lot of these companies do. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, is that they can employ these standards and then they are held to them, but then so are their competitors. And it's an advantage against their lower competitors. But like the famous example is, can you cry fire in a crowded theater? And the answer supposedly is no, but I say the answer is yes. Absolutely you can. And if there's no fire and people get hurt, you are held liable for causing the damage to that place, for causing the damage to the people. It's this guy's private property. He has every right to have rules like that and hold you responsible. I mean, yes, he would have to catch you, but but we're talking about the principle.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Okay, I just want to skip to the thing about how they're doing this in, it's Meta is being sued or being investigated under a criminal count for, it says U.S. prosecutors in Virginia are sending out subpoenas in their investigation of whether Meta facilitated and profited from the illegal sale of drugs. So Meta is bending over backwards to aid this investigation. It's hiring outside firms to screen advertising and content. And this is just what I'm talking about. It's self-regulating. And once they set that bar, then if you sued a competitor who did not meet that standard for damages to you, the first thing you do in tort law, if I remember law school correctly, is you show that this standard is totally achievable in a viable business model. And I think that's how they got like airbags in cars. The manufacturers weren't putting airbags in cars. They said they're not safe enough, whatever. And I believe they got sued by somebody who got injured and wouldn't have been if there hadn't been an airbag. And the reason that the auto companies lost is that it was proven that it was economically viable to put airbags in cars. And of course it is. I'm not saying I like that, the way that particular standard works for tort. I generally like tort law because I don't like a priori restraints. Anyway, so they're doing that. And this also, so it raises the bar, and that will mean that other companies have to do it. And because it costs a lot, smaller startups, it increases the cost to have a startup company, reduces the competition. Again, a regulatory barrier to entry that isn't a formal regulation. But I'll tell you, do you think Mark Zuckerberg or anyone at Meta is going to get punished the way Ross Ulbricht has been punished for having a platform that facilitated drug sales, which, by the way, he was set up coming and going by the government? This was absolutely not allowed to be brought up in his trial. So I don't even know if his platform was any better or worse than any of this. He did the Silk Road. I think it was the Silk Road. Whatever. It was the dark web, I guess they call it. But I just feel like it was the free web, and they had to shut that down. And he was the squirrel they nailed to the trees. And he just celebrated his 10th year in prison. He got 2 life sentences plus 40 years for something he absolutely didn't do. Or I should say, for something that no one else is going to be punished for doing the exact same thing. Anyway, okay. Another Supreme Court case about government involvement with free speech is such an interesting one, and it did not make the headlines. I don't like the editorials, like in the Wall Street Journal and stuff. I don't usually read that, but this one caught my eye. Here's the headline. It said, "When local officials gag dissenters with handcuffs. In Gonzalez v. Trevino, the Supreme Court will decide if bureaucrats have legal immunity when they order critics arrested." And here it is. Here's the setup, I believe. So it says, in 2019, Sylvia Gonzalez, then 72, was elected to the city council in her small town, Castle Hills, Texas. She spearheaded a citizen's petition calling for the removal of the poorly performing city manager. She alleges in her lawsuit that to teach her a lesson, the city manager's allies, the mayor and the police chief, schemed to have her arrested. Ms. Gonzalez was charged under a misdemeanor statute for misplacing a government document, the very petition she had championed. Her petition was considered a government document. Because of the way she treated it, they arrested her. Like, that woman must have been squeaky clean. Squeaky. The alleged conspirators had Ms. Gonzalez arrested, and off to jail she went. Her mugshot splashed across the local media. I guess Trump got off easy with the Mar-a-Lago. A month later, the local prosecutor dismissed the charges. It says in September 2020, the Institute for Justice filed the federal suit on Ms. Gonzalez's behalf against the city of Castle Hills, the mayor, the police chief, and a special detective. The district court rejected the defendant's claim of qualified immunity. This is one of those things that, like, shocks the conscience. That protects government officials from liability for constitutional violations unless an earlier decision has clearly established the law under similar circumstances. So the Constitution is not good enough law. The Fifth Circuit reversed that ruling and held that her free speech rights did not overcome the town official's qualified immunity. So this is about whether she can sue or not. This is what the Supreme Court is asking. There is a precedent, Neves v. Bartlett, where cops on the scene who want to shut down your free speech rights on the ground can take any probable cause for anything and arrest you if they have probable cause and it's, you know, whatever. So they're allowed to do it, even if it's like clearly they're just trying to shut you up because it's like imminent or whatever. It's like in the moment. But this was plotted in advance, and it's such an abuse of power. The newspaper goes on to say that her case isn't the only recent example. In Newton, Iowa, in 2022, the mayor had 22-year-old Noah Peterson arrested for criticizing him and police at a city council meeting. In Laredo, Texas, in 2017, local officials had citizen journalist Priscilla Villarreal arrested for asking a police officer for non-public information. And in Marion, Kansas, in 2023, the police chief orchestrated the raid of a local newspaper that was investigating him. While these officials used broadly written criminal statutes and probable cause to suspect minor criminal violations as pretext to punish critics, I remember personally when Jocelyn Elders, who was the Surgeon General, maybe the only Surgeon General who was a woman that I can remember, maybe there's one now, but I remember she was the first. And she said things that people didn't like. Like they said that they didn't like that she said masturbation should be taught in school. Just so you know, I don't think you need to teach that in school. But that's what they say made people mad about her. But I think it's because she was she thought that the drug war should be studied for its efficacy. And shortly thereafter, her son was arrested on a drug charge. Rush Limbaugh, similarly, when he made it to TV, I think he had just crossed a line where they were like, this guy needs to stay in his silo. He cannot have that kind of reach. And they arrested him for drugs, which they definitely set him up for. They could have done it before, but they did it in that. So I would say that this is, and actually drugs, that points out, like drugs are a currency of power. I always thought that. They get your money, they spend the money, they can arrest you for it. It's bad news. Because it's not inherently wrong. So people don't not do it. They just do it if they can get away with it sometimes. So I don't like mala prohibita crimes, like bad because they're prohibited, not mala in se, like, which is bad in the essence. So yes, I think that's been going on for the longest time. Anyway, let's see. Another thing in the news, Trump apparently cannot get the bond together for his payment. It's like $400 million and no one will take his real estate as collateral. I mean, that is definitely a sign that he's not worth as much as he says that he's worth, which was the actual basis of the suit, is that he defrauded lenders as to his net worth. However, there were no damages. So this is a ridiculous thing. And I believe, yeah, I don't think there's been any damages even alleged. It's a government action. I don't think it's like a tort, like a suit for damages. All right, what else do we have here? I have a couple of quick hits. I'll give you everything I got. Putin won re-election again. It was a landslide. He's 71. He's been in power for 24 years now. He gets 6 more. The Wall Street Journal spun it as like he had to gin up this mandate so that he could implement his sinister agenda without any questions. So he made it look like he won by a landslide. I mean, let's see what the numbers are. 74% turnout and an 88% of the vote. Like it's as close to unanimous. The only thing closer to unanimous I ever heard that could even be considered a fair election was the Crimean election, which had a lot of observers there. And it was basically everyone voted and it was almost unanimous. So the guy's popular. I'm not surprised he's popular. Look at all the traitorous statesmen we have in the world, that people who just sell out their own countries. If this is the limited hangout that the Russian people need to get on board, I would take that. I mean, he's at least on their side. So we have these horrible totalitarian, fascist, socialist governments that are not on our side. You know, if they were all on the same page. So listen to the things that he's doing. And it's funny because with a couple of exceptions, it's basically the exact same agenda we're being pushed all the time as being like the greatest thing on earth. So he wants to revive Russia's conservative Orthodox traditions. This is according to Wall Street Journal. I don't know if that's a platform or whatever, but they're not bad traditions. He wants to increase taxes on the rich and make the tax code more progressive. Like, I hate that idea because it's usually just against working people, that actual holders of assets don't pay anything, even though the Air Force is basically there to protect their property. So I almost feel like all taxes should be property taxes. If you're using government protection, which is the only valid concern of government, there should be a head tax, which is like your person. And then a property tax, like whatever the value is that you want protected. Oh, that means it's time for comments. Let's finish this story and then we'll go to comments. He wants to keep the economy ticking despite the sanctions, which he has had success in doing. I think I would probably be fine with that. He wants to give veterans educational and training opportunities, which the Wall Street Journal describes as creating a new elite. Since when are the, like, you're not always exalting soldiers, but that seems pretty, we certainly do it. And then he's spending billions to tackle poverty and rebuild the country's aging infrastructure. I mean, I'm a libertarian, so these are not my policies, but these are the policies that our government promised us he might actually deliver it to his people. I was in Russia twice, as it happened, 5 years ago, approximately, and 15 years ago. And in those years, between 15 and 5 years ago, the difference was tremendous. I've mentioned this before, how somebody we were with who lived there, an English guy, was like, I mean, it's like living in Germany. You know, it's like, no offense. Had Tiffany Gap, everything down, you know, millions of McDonald's. Like, yeah, I mean, it was too much westernized probably, but it wasn't westernized in this way. So my brother's super conservative. He hates noise. There's a lot of things about him that are conservative. He hates noise, hates pink hair. So he's like, when you go to Russia, let me know if it's noisy and if you see any pink effing hair. So I saw once or twice, I saw purple hair, but I mean, that's not a lot. And one time we were in, like, in front of the Winter Palace, I think it was. And a car drove up, people got out, put like cardboard on the floor, turned on a boombox and started breakdancing. Within 2 minutes, the cops had them out of there. And look, you can call me a libertarian and say you don't want that. However, whose property is that? So I don't believe in public property. So it's either somebody's private property, in which case you could rouse them yourself, or it's the government's property, public property that they've basically appropriated from us and have a responsibility, I could argue, to treat it the way we would treat it. So by throwing those people out, they can do it on their own front lawn, unless their noise waves like float over to mine, then that's like a legitimate dispute for courts. Anyway, one thing I thought was really funny about all this, and like they're trying to say that there's opposition and that the Navalny death is a demonstration of how he suppresses the opposition. Everything they said that he did, jail critics, muzzle the press, introduce new laws, stifle criticism of his actions in Ukraine. That sounds like exactly what Zelensky is doing. Exactly, like every single thing, including the policy about Ukraine. But the journal describes, this is really funny, they describe that these brave protesters are sabotaging this fraudulent election by pouring paint in ballot boxes and doing other things to keep people from voting or to destroy their votes, lighting ballot boxes on fire. And I kind of feel like that's where people's actual votes are going. So if you're, you know, are you trying to stop the corruption or are you trying to stop the voting? You know, it just seemed a little, you know, I mean, I understand the idea of protest, but. So there you go. I have a couple of quick hits. I'll save them for next time. Let us do some comments. Just disappeared my comments. Oh, why do I hate breakdancers so much? Maybe because I grew up in New York and they blocked the sidewalk. And if they weren't so loud, they were actually pretty good, I have to say. They were good. And I've noticed this. If you ever watch the videos of like some gorgeous chick who can tie herself into a pretzel or do fantastic like acrobatics, I always think they're from Eastern Bloc countries because they weren't spending all their time consuming. You know, they're bored. They got nothing to do. They didn't have a lot going on. So they're like 20 years behind where people just like, when I was growing up, people would just occupy themselves. My husband talks about how he took apart his bicycle and put it back together like 1,000 times. Like if there's something wrong with your bike, he could probably fix it in 5 minutes because he had nothing else to do. We had nothing else to do. Qualified immunity isn't, I don't even know if I like limited liability corporations. Johnny Bedmore, breakdancing right now. I believe that actually. I can believe that. Putin 2024. Nice. Good one. Yes, Mary Pinchot Meyer. The murder scene looks like a Hollywood stage set. I don't think that was staged. I mean, was it not one of her sons? Who wrote the book about it? Mary's Mosaic was the name of the book. Angus Mustang, I once yelled movie in a crowded firehouse. Very, very funny. Clint, the federal government has zero authority to be involved in healthcare. Correct. Or purposefully poisoning the people in the first place. Yes, death care also. Neither health care nor sickness care. Elongated muskrat. I think, see, I'm reading the comments backwards, so it's going to start getting weird and then I have to stop. Yes, he clarifies, the government's got social media going under private business, so free speech doesn't apply. All the while, the government controls social media. Yeah, the thing about Elon Musk that's so funny is like now he's involved in the satellite, like the blackjack thing, which is surveillance. I mean, I know that he's a real human being and that is his name and everything, but he qualifies as a created person in the true sense of the word. I mean, he's as if you took all of these, you know, it's almost like he's like an amalgamation of the CIA, like, or whatever, whoever's behind the surveillance state or whatever. It's like his face is an animation of it. Like that's what he is. I'm not making fun of how he looks. I'm just saying that's what he's designed to put a person in front of this very complex machine that's had, you know, a lot of planning for a very long time and looks like it's just some guy. It's just some guy doing it, and it's definitely not. All right, I think we've jumped the shark here. This is my friend James. Cats love boxes. Was I talking about cats? Okay. I love you, James. I'm telling you, they will be coming after Rumble, Rockfin, and the little bit of free speech that YouTube allows. Yeah, I know that. I know. But what can we do? Like, we just have to keep trying. Did I tell you guys the three things my mother said that I'm living by? I'm living by these. I probably said it, but I'll say it probably 100 more times before I'm through. Over the course of her last couple of months, she said a few things. One was directed at my listeners. One she said to my daughter, and one she said to me to say to my kids. So I told her that y'all wanted to pray for her. What should they pray for? Meaning, stop suffering, die in my sleep, I don't know. And she said, tell them that I love them and that they should pray for world peace. So pray for world peace. My daughter came down for her 95th birthday, and the last thing she said to her, she pulled her close, and she said, enjoy everything. My daughter's 19, and you just can't, like, my grandmother used to say stuff like that to me. She was just like, look at how, well, what she actually said to me is, look at how big and brown you are. It's like, okay. Because she was this tiny, super wrinkled Irish lady, and she was just amazed that she had this like giant Italian granddaughter. Funny thing was, I'm not Italian, but that she just, there's just like two people in the world for her, like blue-eyed people and brown-eyed people, Irish people and Italian people. So my mother said to my daughter, enjoy everything. And then she said to me, just look at your children. And look at your children and tell them, ask yourself, what do I have to give? So these are the words I'm living by, and it's making me very happy. I feel empowered by praying for world peace. Like, I'm praying for world peace. Maybe you don't believe in the power of prayer, but I do, and I'm praying for world peace, and that's probably the best thing I can do. I am asking myself, and I ask my kids, what do I have to give? I feel like this is something I have to give. She thought this was something I had to give. And the best part is enjoy everything. So give what you can, pray for world peace, and enjoy everything. So yes, free speech looks like it's on the wane. Maybe history is cyclical. Maybe we'll get it back. But that's my thing. That's what I got right now. Thank you so much. My mom, I don't know whether I should pray for her or to her. I've had, you know, it comes in waves. Like, I miss her, and I really miss her when, like, there's many times when I want to talk to her. And I realize that every time I sat down with my, like, tea or my Lebanese white coffee, that I would call her. So, and then a friend of mine, did I tell you all this? That a friend of mine suggested instead I say a prayer. So I say the prayer to St. Monica, that particularly her children, because she wanted her children to return to the church, that they return to the church, because St. Monica prayed for St. Augustine to return to the church. Anyway, but yeah, so I miss her for that. And, you know, it's this crazy experience. I try, as my producer says, stay Irish. So, like, you try not to think about that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you just power through and you remember the good stuff and you enjoy everything. So, oh, James explains. People jumped into the internet like a cat will jump into a box. Yes, he's one of these, like, higher level thinkers. You got to explain for me, James. Oh, thank you so much, JB. She will add world peace to her rosary prayers. A perfect place to put them. Johnny Benmore. Very humorous. You may be praying for world peace, but have you ever tried breakdancing? That could be more fun. Hey, man, world peace, just think about it. She used to call this, we had a culture of death, and she chose life to the very end, even though it meant suffering for her. Like, she wouldn't do the little morphine kick. She wouldn't have hospice. And, you know, well, I'll probably tell the whole story some in some other format, but I have something interesting for you all right now. I think Kat Duckness is probably a good breakdancer. Or maybe a philosophical breakdancer. So she would be a breakdancer if she could breakdance. She'll understand what I'm saying. Okay, so here's my new thing. I want to, at the end of the show, generally speaking, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, just play a clip. Maybe it's pertinent to the show or maybe not, but I don't play a lot of clips during the show. I want this to be something that listeners can contribute. So if you've got a 1 minute clip or a 3 minute clip, something outrageous that a politician said or whatever, I hate watching videos. So I am not going to be able to find them myself. Send them to me at monicaperezshow@gmail.com. And you don't even have to cut the clip. If you just tell me exactly where it is, like where you want it to start, where you want it to stop by the chrono mark, little timestamp, that would be great. But this today to inaugurate this segment, it's actually quite a long clip, and it's not a clip, it's a speech. It's the speech of JFK, because it was so apropos to what we were talking about, how, you know, you can censor speech in the time of hot war, but what is a hot war? Well, hot war is a hot war, not a cold war, not COVID, but everybody wants you to think that. The thing that's interesting about this JFK speech, it's the April 27th, 1961. It's called the American Newspaper Publishers Association, you know, meeting that he gave the speech that he titled The President and the Press. And you've heard probably a clip from this. It's like a 1 minute clip where he says, like, there's this vast conspiracy in the world that operates in secret. And it's all, I've never heard it not taken out of context, where it sounds like he's describing the cabal, the powers that be. And in that case, oh, I would never do that. You could borrow clips from No Agenda when you need some. I know they do that. I never listened to No Agenda. I don't think I've ever listened to them. I've had a clip on there. I know Binkley had a clip on there recently. I think you told me that. But I don't know if they just do podcasts or if they do a bunch of stuff, but I wanted to play this crazy clip of Obama saying how conspiracy theorists in the town square, like, needed to be stamped out, even if they were right, something like that. So there are lots of clips that I would like to play, but I can't interrupt my flow. And on WSB, I used to do it, but I just feel like it interrupts the flow. I used to take calls that interrupted the flow. I like to do it like this. So I'm going to do it like this. And so if you listen to the whole speech, you realize that he wasn't talking about secrecy as in a bad way. He was saying that's what they're doing and that's what we need to do. And this speech, I'm not sure I have the whole thing here. It's quite long. It basically was in five parts. He starts with, like, it's really like a study in propaganda. It's quite brilliant. He begins by winning over his audience. I might not have that part in this clip, but with pandering to them and some self-deprecating humor, he establishes the danger that we're facing. You know, he establishes his facts there. He asks for self-censorship. He asks for scaremongering. He asks them to scare people about this. And then he closes by exalting the high status and the responsibility of the press. It's really well structured. But here's what's funny. This speech was given shortly after his inauguration. And he seemed quite, had his mind right with the powers that be. Now, someday, when it's appropriate, I will play the speech that he gave at the American University, which was shortly before his assassination, where he says something very, very different. He talks about a Pax Americana, or he talks about a peace for all time, not a Pax Americana, a peace for all people for all time. That's a very, very good speech. And I think that had something to do with the timing of his assassination. Anyway, so I think it's worth listening to. If I can put it up here on the screen, then this is what I will leave you with. Hopefully it works. And see, if you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, you don't like it. But always put the hope to put a few clips at the end. Okay.
I want to talk about our common responsibilities in the face of a common danger. The events of recent weeks may have helped to illuminate that challenge for some, but the dimensions of its threat have loomed large on the horizon for many years. Whatever our hopes may be for the future, for reducing this threat or living with it, there is no escaping either the gravity or the totality of its challenge to our survival and to our security. A challenge that confronts us in unaccustomed ways in every sphere of human activity. This deadly challenge imposes upon our society two requirements of direct concern, both to the press and to the president. Two requirements that may seem almost contradictory in tone, but which must be reconciled and fulfilled if we are to meet this national peril. I refer first to the need for far greater public information, and second, to the need for far greater official secrecy. The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. But I do ask, every publisher, every editor, and every newsman in the nation to re-examine his own standards and to recognize the nature of our country's peril. In time of war, the government and the press have customarily joined in an effort based largely on self-discipline to prevent unauthorized disclosures to the enemy. In times of clear and present danger, The courts have held that even the privileged rights of the First Amendment must yield to the public's need for national security. Today, no war has been declared. And however fierce the struggle may be, it may never be declared in the traditional fashion. Our way of life is under attack. Those who make themselves our enemy are advancing around the globe. The survival of our friends is in danger. And yet no war has been declared. No borders have been crossed by marching troops. No missiles have been fired. If the press is awaiting a declaration of war, before it imposes the self-discipline of combat conditions, then I can only say that no war ever posed a greater threat to our security. If you are awaiting a finding of clear and present danger, then I can only say that the danger has never been more clear and its presence has never been more imminent. It requires a change in outlook, a change in tactics, a change in missions by the government, by the people, by every businessman or labor leader, and by every newspaper. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no rumor is printed, no secret is revealed. It conducts the Cold War in short, with a wartime discipline no democracy would ever hope or wish to match. Nevertheless, every democracy recognizes the necessary restraints of national security. And the question remains whether those restraints need to be more strictly observed if we are to oppose this kind of attack as well as outright invasion. For the facts of the matter are that this nation's foes have openly boasted of acquiring through our newspapers information they would otherwise hire agents to acquire through theft, bribery, or espionage, that details of this nation's covert preparations to counter the enemy's covert operations have been available to every newspaper reader, friend and foe alike, that the size, the strength, the location, and the nature of our forces and weapons, and our plans and strategy for their use, have all been pinpointed in the press and other news media to a degree sufficient to satisfy any foreign power, and that in at least one case, the publication of details concerning a secret mechanism whereby satellites were followed required its alteration at the expense of considerable time and money. The newspapers which printed these stories were loyal, patriotic, responsible, and well-meaning. Had we been engaged in open warfare, they undoubtedly would not have published such items. But in the absence of open warfare, they recognized only the tests of journalism and not the tests of national security. And my question tonight is whether additional tests should not now be adopted. That question is for you alone to answer. No public official should answer it for you. No governmental plan should impose its restraints against your will. But I would be failing in my duty to the nation in considering all of the responsibilities that we now bear and all of the means at hand to meet those responsibilities if I did not commend this problem to your attention and urge its thoughtful consideration. On many earlier occasions, I have said, and your newspapers have constantly said, that these are times that appeal to every citizen's sense of sacrifice and self-discipline. They call out to every citizen to weigh his rights and comforts against his obligations to the common good. I cannot now believe that those citizens who serve in the newspaper business consider themselves exempt from that appeal. I have no intention of establishing a new office of war information to govern the flow of news. I am not suggesting any new forms of censorship or new types of security classifications. I have no easy answer to the dilemma that I have posed and would not seek to impose it if I had one. But I am asking the members of the newspaper profession and the industry in this country to re-examine their own responsibilities, to consider the degree and the nature of the present danger, and to heed the duty of self-restraint, which that danger imposes upon us all. Every newspaper now asks itself, with respect to every story, is it news? All I suggest is that you add the question, is it in the interest of national security? And I hope that every group in America, unions and businessmen and public officials at every level, will ask the same question of their endeavors and subject their actions to this same exacting test. And should the press of America consider and recommend the voluntary assumption of specific new steps or machinery, I can assure you that we will cooperate wholeheartedly with those recommendations. Perhaps there will be no recommendations. Perhaps there is no answer to the dilemma faced by a free and open society in a cold and secret war. In times of peace, any discussion of this subject and any action that results are both painful and without precedent. But this is a time of peace and peril which knows no precedent in history. It is the unprecedented nature of this challenge that also gives rise to your second obligation, an obligation which I share. And that is our obligation to inform and alert the American people, to make certain that they possess all the facts that they need and understand them as well, the perils, the prospects, the purposes of our program, and the choices that we face. No president should fear public scrutiny of his program, for from that scrutiny comes understanding, and from that understanding comes support or opposition, and both are necessary. I am not asking your newspapers to support an administration, but I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people. For I have complete confidence. And the response and dedication of our citizens, whenever they are fully informed. I not only could not stifle controversy among your readers, I welcome it. This administration intends to be candid about its errors. For as a wise man once said, an error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. We intend to accept full responsibility for our errors, and we expect you to point them out when we miss them. Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed, and no republic can survive. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. And that is why our press was protected by the First Amendment, the only business in America specifically protected by the Constitution, not primarily to amuse and entertain, not to emphasize the trivial and the sentimental, not to simply give the public what it wants, but to inform, to arouse, to reflect, to state our dangers and our opportunities, to indicate our crises and our choices, to lead, mold, educate, and sometimes even anger public opinion. This means greater coverage and analysis of international news, for it is no longer far away and foreign, but close at hand and local. It means greater attention to improved understanding of the news, as well as improved transmission. And it means, finally, that government at all levels must meet its obligation to provide you with the fullest possible information outside the narrowest limits of national security, and we intend to do it. It was early in the 17th century that Francis Bacon remarked on three recent inventions already transforming the world: the compass, gunpowder, and the printing press. Now the links between the nations, first forged by the compass, have made us all citizens of the world, the hopes and threats of one becoming the hopes and threats of us all. In that one world's effort to live together, the evolution of gunpowder to its ultimate limit has warned mankind of the terrible consequences of failure. And so it is to the printing press, to the recorder of man's deeds, the keeper of his conscience, the courier of his news, that we look for strength and assistance, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.